box, office, refund, box office refund podcast.
Hello and welcome to Box Office Refund Podcast. I'm Nico Bell.
And I'm Ward.
And we review low-rated movies.
And decide if their critics were wrong.
Ward, how you doing tonight?
I'm awesome. It's our first episode of the new year, our first official episode.
Yes. Very exciting. And I really picked a great one for us to start with. I picked The Hurricane Heist. Thank you for correcting me on my email reminder to you. I was just saying Hurricane Heist, but you are right. This is The Hurricane Heist. As if there were like 500 Hurricane Heists in the past, but this is the
one. Well, no, I was thinking about the Hurricane Heist in the future, because I think when people see this movie, they're going to say, oh, we need more hurricanes and more heists together. But I just want people to know this is the one that started it all.
Ward, would it surprise you to know that I own this movie?
Wait, I just have a quick question. Did you buy it to watch it for this episode, or did you previously own it?
What is the answer that would get me less ridiculed?
I mean, both. I don't know. I'm not sure there's a right answer. Either way is bad.
I bought it when it first started streaming. I watched it, much to my delight, and then I watched it again for you.
I have a question. You saw it came out on streaming, you thought, huh, that's interesting. What tipped the scales to say, I need to spend hard-earned money to own that?
Well, I figured I would watch it multiple times.
But what, like, what made you think that?
Correct. It's The Hurricane Heist. How would you not watch this multiple times?
Fair enough.
It is such an incredible movie premise already that I knew that this was going to be a winner. I knew
it. So was it the premise alone? Did one of the actors in it or the director, did one of those sell you? Or was it the premise alone you thought, I'm in, I don't need to know anything else?
Oh no, this is the premise. A bank heist, not a bank heist, but a treasury heist within a hurricane. You got to know that that is going to be a winner. There's no way this movie can go wrong. And despite what I'm about to say tonight, just keep that in mind. This is a winner of a movie. I love it. I'm going to watch it again. I have no doubt.
That's interesting. I'll tell you what drew me to this movie.
The fact that I made you watch it?
That's the main reason. I mean, I knew this movie existed. I had no desire to actually watch it. There's just nothing really compelling about it. But I did see it was directed by Rob Cohen. And I saw that Toby Kebbell's in it. I really like him. He is in my favorite episode of television ever, Black Mirror's The Entire History of You. I first saw him in Rock and Roll. So I like him. I don't watch every movie he makes just because he makes a few that are duds, so he's not like a lock. But oh, that's cool. Yes. The Hurricane Heist, it looks like a mix of The Fast and the Furious and Twister. Rob Cohen directs it. He directed the first Fast and the Furious, which I like that movie because they actually loved cars. The sequel, they abandoned that premise after the fourth movie. They're like, oh, who cares about cars? Let's just blow stuff up and have The Rock punch stuff. So I'm not saying The Fast and the Furious is a good movie, but I appreciate their love of cars because so few movies genuinely love cars.
Focus.
So back to this. I thought, oh, you know, Fast and the Furious and Twister, that could be a winner. I knew it was going to be a low-budget effort. And, you know, Twister, I haven't thought about that movie, I don't know, since, what, 1995 or 6? That really was a phenomenon. That made Storm Chasing cool. Maybe this movie would do it, too. I don't know, but I just remember Twister was a phenomenon. You saw it everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think going into this, thinking about Twister is the wrong mindset to have. That will only lead to disappointment. I'm like, oh, wow, I remember this cool scene from Twister. I remember that cool scene from Twister. You would think this movie would just copy them verbatim. That's easy. But I thought, no,
well,
we don't want to go that high.
You're comparing tornadoes to hurricanes. So first of all, you're not going to get any funnels because you're dealing with a hurricane. You're not dealing with a tornado. So you've set yourself up for failure right away.
Not really. Like, that had nothing to do with my expectations. The funnel versus the twister.
No.
Not a part of it. Didn't play a role.
What I love, you said Toby Kebbell. He is English. He's British. And the other lead, his brother, whose name is Breeze in the movie.
Yeah, his
Ryan
name is
Quentin.
Breeze. That really seems like a placeholder name that somebody just forgot to change.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get so far into it, like, crap, we've already recorded a scene. I guess we're stuck with this.
Well, he is Australian, which explains their amazing Southern accents in this movie. Because it really does sound like two foreigners trying to be Southern. But we'll get to it all. And you're right, the names. So, yes, Breeze, obviously. But William means, like, conqueror and something like that. So I really think someone just went through, like, a baby book and was trying to come up with clever names. And that's what they came up with.
I mean, I would like it more if they both had dumb names like Breeze and, I don't know, some
Thunder.
Yeah, something like that. Like something dumb like that. Like Breeze and Windy or something. You know, why not? Like but if you're just going to do one, it just seems like you missed the boat.
Well, Breeze is literally like the wind blowing around.
Yeah, I've
like,
never
that's
heard
his character
anybody
is. William is the
Breeze.
Conqueror. Yeah. Okay. Well,
if we're going to, like, based on what they do correct. In the movie, we should have done Breeze and Truck.
Oh my gosh, that would have been amazing. Even if it was, like, Breeze and Steel, that would have
Tank.
Been fantastic.
Name him Tank.
Yes! Oh my gosh, you are so
And like
right.
that, I love that. Yes. But the fact that his name is yes. Will, which is just a normal name, either yes. they both have to have crazy names or they both have, like, normal names, like Will and Bob. I don't know.
Yes! Oh my gosh. Hurricane Heist 2. They have to change his name.
No, he has a son, and it's a father-son thing.
Oh my gosh.
Or a cousin. No, I think they should pull out a cousin. A son's too obvious. Pull out a cousin. Like, oh yeah, you didn't know I was a storm chaser too? I didn't even know I had a cousin.
Well, he's
That's the premise for the whole movie. I love it.
He is not a storm chaser. Will, first of all, I don't know where Will lives.
He doesn't. He lives out of the truck. Did you not see the daily labeled sandwiches?
Oh, the Batmobile. That's what I've called it the entire time in my notes. The Batmobile.
You know, if anything, this movie did not show off that truck enough. I could have watched 30 minutes more if it's just the truck.
If I were them, if I were Will, I would have just hunkered down in that truck the entire time. I wouldn't have left that truck. That truck was awesome. But we can talk a little bit about what this is for people who haven't seen it, and obviously everyone
I wasn't even done with my preamble yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to give a little bit of backdrop so people know where we're what we're talking about.
Well, I feel like what I've got to say should preempt that. Obviously, I don't know that for a fact, but it just feels like it should.
We're already starting this. All right, go ahead.
So Maggie Grace is in this too. And I remember she was in Lost. She was in Taken. Yep. And she's not the actor I go to say, oh, yeah, guaranteed.
She's not a good performance. Actor.
But you know what's amazing? I would have called Toby Kebbell a good actor. In this, Maggie Grace outshines him. And I feel like I have to defend him because I've already said I like him. A, somebody should realize the first day of filming, he should not be doing a Southern accent. They should say, I'm sorry,
yes,
that was a mistake.
Should.
We should have cast at least Americans if they're going to attempt a Southern accent.
Yes, they both were awful.
That the script is terrible. So you can't fault him for that. And it really, I think Rob Cohen makes a strong case that he's not a very strong director in this movie. Like if he had to argue, I'm not as a good director, he should submit this movie. Because there are a number of things that he just does flat out wrong in this movie. And he really has no excuse for it because these types of movies have been done before. So he has a blueprint to follow.
I'm sorry. Has there been another incredible, epic, natural disaster movie where a bunch of thieves rob a treasury in the midst of a hurricane? A hurricane that they apparently have waited for years and years and years in order to cover their robbing of a
treasury? I don't think they ever
said
they waited years. But there are heist movies. There are natural disaster movies. There are a number of things they could have taken from Twister that would have helped this. They didn't. You know, there are a number of things they could have taken from Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is actually a natural disaster movie because dinosaurs are natural. There's so many movies I could reference that this movie could have just copied verbatim, like little bits and pieces.
But they're not going to copy. Why would you want them to copy? They came up with something
original and fun. To make this more entertaining.
Oh, I was entertained. You were entertained?
Like,
were you bored?
I was never bored. I'll give them that.
See?
I was incredulous many times. I thought, wow, that's so dumb.
But you were engaged.
I'll give them full credit for that. I mean, like, Batman and Robin was the most boring movie I've ever seen in my life. This comes nowhere close. Like, I was entertained start to stop. Towards the end, once we get to the big rigs, like, there's some silly stuff going on there. But at that point, I didn't care. I was along for the ride. They kind of just numbed my sense of logic. I'm like, whatever, man. This is cool. I dig it.
Yeah.
You know, like, Maggie Grace, has she done anything other than Lost and Taken?
I think she might be in a TV show or something. Is she the same person that was in Chuck?
I appreciate she was not playing a kid, because, you know, she was playing a young adult in Lost, and then after that in Taken, she's playing a teenager, which seemed like a bit of a stretch.
She appeared in the Twilight Saga, it looks like.
Who didn't appear in that?
Really? I don't know. I never watched any of those. Oh, Fear the Walking Dead. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What is she doing that? Do you watch that show?
No. But I mean, I guess she was in it for a little while.
She could be the star. Who knows?
A Californication, Supercon, Hurricane Heist, Aftermath, a bunch of random movies. No, I've never thought she was a very good actor. I think she's a little... I don't know, she's a little overrated.
She seems completely competent in this movie, though. I will say, of all the performances I've seen, which is Lost and Taken... this is easily her best performance.
Ugh. I don't like that.
Give me a better performance you've seen her in, then.
I think Taken, she was okay in.
She was, like, 25 playing a 15-year-old. I think from the jump.
Well, everybody in, like, Hollywood who's, you know, is 20 playing 15-year-olds, you can't hold that against them.
I mean, Taken was a great movie. Phenomenal movie. I just didn't think she was the strongest performance. But then again, she's opposite Liam Neeson. Anybody's going to be a little, you know, they're just going to get outshined. It's Liam Neeson.
Okay, so you have... her name is Casey, and she and
Casey?
Her partner, Casey. Yeah.
Is that her
well,
first
her last
name?
Name. Yeah, but they call her Casey for the
You
movie.
Know, if you'd asked me what her name was in this movie,
wow.
For the life, I wouldn't have told you.
We are starting off super strong.
I would have said, so her don't they just call her agent every time?
No. And she and her partner, Connor, drive the old money to the treasury, which is in Alabama. It's right on the Gulf. And they are getting all their money put in right before this massive hurricane is coming. You have Will, who is a meteorologist, not a storm chaser, just a meteorologist with this awesome weatherproof Batmobile
truck. What
car.
Kind of weather station has the funds for that truck? I mean, what is that? A $250,000 truck? The thing is amazing. Yeah. And then they cut back to the weather department. And I don't know. I just assume most TV stations, the weather department consists of the meteorologist and maybe, if he's lucky, an assistant. This one has a fully stocked weather room, 12 people all on computers. It looks like a war room. I just want to know what
really
agency
is.
Has that kind of money for the weather? Not even the federal government has an outfit like that.
Yeah, it looked very much like a NASA room or like a CIA room. And he is telling them, he's warning them that this is the hurricane of the century. And then his brother...
We have to cover exactly how he tells them this. Potentially my favorite quote of the movie.
I was still working on the premise.
But you went out there with it. They're underestimating you. I can smell it.
Yeah.
I mean, he can smell hurricanes to know how bad they are. That's amazing.
I know. He's the hurricane whisperer.
He's the hurricane smeller.
He has an older brother, Breeze, who is basically a screw-up. He had some time in the military that we know of. He was like a high school football star. And that's basically all we get from him. And then he's... like a mechanic now? Or
I feel like you're underselling Breeze a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's basically what
there's a dichotomy.
At the beginning. At the beginning of it.
You're still underselling. There's a dichotomy to these brothers. We'll get to the first scene very soon that kind of shaped both of their lives, but it made Will become, he wants to find the source of hurricanes, and he wants to conquer them. Breeze decides that life doesn't matter, it's all a ride, and he's just going to have a good time. So, you know, it just puts them in opposite ways. And I thought that was an interesting dichotomy. It'd be great if the movie built on that at all, or kind of developed that, or their brothers. But that's not this kind of movie this is.
I just saw Breeze as a screw-up who was always trying to redeem himself and never quite...
Come on, he's a repairman, and when the Treasury Department has millions of dollars on the line and they need a repairman in a hurricane, who do they call?
They call
Breeze.
I know, they call him.
You know what I'd love to see? Like, I bet Breeze has a commercial on a local TV station, and I bet it's like, my name's Breeze, I can repair your car, I can repair your air conditioner. Big trucks, small trucks, lawn mowers, push mowers, weed whackers, generators, you got it, I can repair it. You know he's got a commercial like that.
I want to see that commercial.
And I know for a fact Breeze could repair anything.
Yeah, well,
and
when
the sequel comes out, like, I want to know, what's this man repairing this time? Breeze, we have this nuclear bomb. We don't know what to do. We need you to repair it. Give me my tools. I'll get on this thing real quick.
That would be fantastic. Okay, let's get into it, shall we?
I feel like we're already into it. At least ankle deep.
The opening scene with the kids, and they are in a pickup truck with their father, and there's a hurricane going on.
It's 1992.
Right?
This is Hurricane Andrew. Yes. And I remember Hurricane Andrew. I'm like, oh, wow. We're getting some real facts in this. This movie's going to be good. Hurricane Andrew is a real fact. You can't argue that.
Well, yes, I'm not arguing that. I am arguing any facts beyond that.
Oh,
point.
Yeah, beyond that, sure. But Hurricane Andrew is a fact, and that's more facts than I thought I'd get from this movie.
That did happen, yes. So basically, you set up the fact that Breeze, I guess, was playing with his kite or messing around with his kite or something.
A kite?
And because of that, that's what he said. He got delayed with whatever he was doing.
Oh, was that why the little one was blaming him for something? It was the kite?
Yeah, because Will's like, something like, you didn't mess up that dang kite. And then the father's like, hey, now.
That, like, that adds a whole other layer to this. Like, I knew he was blaming for something.
Oh,
I didn't know what he's blaming him for. I just thought it was like brothers ribbing each other.
Oh, no. You missed, like, the.
Yeah, I missed the kite part.
Because Will blames everything.
Well, I knew he blamed him for that. I just thought, like, there's no good reason. But he's got a great reason. It was the kite.
Yeah. Because he was out when he should have been in. So they're out in this hurricane now. It's Breeze's fault. They're stuck in the hurricane. And now we get some terrible parenting.
I just want to like back up just a minute. Like, as this unfolds, like, okay, Alabama. Oh, wow, some very heavy southern accents. Of course, they're in a tow truck. Oh, we're going to throw some football in there. Like, we're just covering everything that people think is about the South.
Excuse me, that football comes back in pivotal ways in this movie.
You know,
let's not gloss over that.
It could have been
so much
better.
When he says, let's practice our football plays in the middle of a hurricane while they're driving in their truck, that comes back.
I really think that's good parenting, though, because you're taking your kid's mind off of it. And if they hadn't learned those plays, ways, they probably would not have defeated terrorists. So, you know, it all works out.
Yes. So they basically realize that they're kind of screwed, and the dad realizes that he needs to get these kids someplace safe. Now, I think what happens is the truck, what happens to the truck? It gets stuck. Well, and
they're
then
driving, and as they're driving, they're a tree driving. Happens to fall right in front of them, so they kind of jump the tree, and I think they get high-centered on the tree.
Okay, and there's a house there. It's not their house, but they end up going in, and the dad's like, you stay here, you guys stay here, you'll be safe here. And then he does probably the stupidest thing ever, and he runs out in the middle of a hurricane to try to wedge the truck free to, I'm presuming, what, continue driving through the hurricane?
Yeah. As soon as he stepped out that door, I knew for a fact he was going to die very soon.
Oh, he was going to die.
But I was a little disappointed in how he died.
I know, right? There was all sorts of opportunities. You thought for sure it was the hurricane. He was going to get swept up. Nope, not what happens. What is it, a silo?
A water tower.
Oh, I'm sorry. A water tower comes rolling down and crushes
But
him.
Here's the thing, like, and this is the start of my big, one of my big issues that continues throughout the movie. Like, let's just go back, and I apologize to this movie I'm going to mention, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. In the beginning,
wow, putting it in the
Indiana,
same
there's the big boulder, he's running from it. And so it's not like we see one shot of the ball and then it's gone. You know, there's back and forth that creates tension, it creates momentum to where we're really invested. In this movie, it easily could have shown that water tower rolling towards the dad looking over his shoulder, seeing it and being panicked. No, the shot we get is it just flattening him, one fell swoop. Like, why is this movie, this movie is allergic to tension. Like, any time it could build tension, it's like, no, we're not doing it. We're not going to build any tension at all. And it really robs the movie a lot of fun. Like, the tension's a fun part. Like, Jurassic Park, again, I'm sorry, Jurassic Park, I should mention you in the review of this movie. But everybody remembers that cup of water trembling. Why? Because it creates tension. Like, you're waiting for what happens next. And in this movie, they not wouldn't have shown that. You would have seen the T-Rex cage, and then the T-Rex would have eaten everybody, and that would have been the end of the movie. I just don't get why the movie does not develop any tension.
Well, I'll defend this opening sequence in that they just really needed to establish that his dad died, and that Breeze felt it was his fault, and Will was, you know, blaming him.
Breeze thought it was his fault, and Will agreed.
Yes, basically. Like, we really didn't need to spend any more time on it than we already did.
You could have given us 30 seconds of a little bit of tension with the water tower. It could have been a better moment than what it was.
Probably, but
I mean, because as far away as that water tower is, like, I just wondered, did the dad wait? And was like, boys, I'm going to race this thing. You watch how fast your old dad can. Like, I just don't get, like, the way it happened, it really kind of boggles the mind as how he didn't notice it earlier or how, I mean, a water tower is large. If it's rolling across the ground, you'd hear it.
Well, he's in the middle of a hurricane.
I don't
Maybe
care.
He
you'd still
hear
it.
Because the winds and
you'd still hear it.
No, you're not gonna buy it.
If there's the winds are so strong he can't hear the water tower, they probably would pick the water tower up and it wouldn't even hit him.
Okay, we're going to have to suspend reality for quite a bit with this movie, especially in terms of hurricane force
Pretty
winds.
Pretty much from start to finish, you have to suspend reality. There's like, this flaunts reality so strong, I almost love it. I don't, but I almost do.
Oh, so close. Because the things that they do later in the movie while the hurricane is at full force is ridiculous. They all would be dead within 30 seconds.
Superman would be jealous of what they pull off in this movie. Superman would be like, dang, I could not do that. They are pretty good.
They are pretty good. So we kind of have to just give it a little bit of leeway with that. But listen, if they had spent any more time on the dad's death, they may have had to cut into our supernatural skull that shows in the clouds that has no bearing on the plot at all.
Man, like, I saw that and I knew it probably didn't have a bearing, but I had some hypotheses. I'm like, where this could go is really amazing. It probably would have been a better movie. Because I saw that skull, I'm thinking, that's probably that little guy's imagination. Like, I get it. But it would be so cool if in this movie, this hurricane is some kind of entity, and he misses a chance to get these kids back in 92, and then 25 years later, the hurricane's back, and he's like, kids, it's time to die. I'm going to get you. And then the whole movie is them running away from the hurricane. Kind of like, what is that movie? It's like the Goldberg Machine movie where Death is trying to get these kids. Devin Sawa was in the first movie.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
But that movie.
Not Death Day, but Final Destination.
Final Destination, that's it, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, again, I knew it wouldn't be that movie, but that would have been such a cool movie.
I think that somewhere out there, there's a script just like that. A script where there is a supernatural hurricane hunting Will. And I hope there is, and I hope one day it gets made, because for a split second, the first time I saw this movie, I was on board with that hurricane being some sort of ghostly, dark, evil force. actually manifesting itself. But then it, you know, nothing ever happens.
The movie The Mist, I've never seen that, but is that a similar thing? I mean, that's some evil mist going on. That's a Stephen King thing, right?
To which one?
The Mist? That's a movie or something like that.
Yeah, it is. It is a movie.
It's based on a Stephen King book. I know that.
It is.
That's all I know.
Yes. And
but isn't that a, yeah. I don't know, live fog?
It's very different.
But is the fog alive?
That's okay.
Does it chase people?
I don't think that the fog is alive. I think it has something to do with plants. Or maybe that's an M. Night
movie. That's the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Okay, I don't know the Mist one then. I'm sorry.
That movie was something.
Okay, focus.
But yeah, you said the skull had no bearing on the plot, and you could argue it doesn't, but it does come back.
It does,
but it's
come
just kind of it's hokey, and like in how this movie's built, that's a very hokey thing to include.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you know what
it is
that they can't do anything subtle in this movie; they just don't know how. So they're trying to set this thing about Will, his emotions, his internal strife, and overcoming it.
Exactly.
And they're like, well, I don't know how to like do this without just showing a skull in the wind. You guys got any ideas? Nah, man,
exactly.
Refresh out. Just go for it.
Yeah, they seriously didn't need to do it at all. I think you're right. And that's just what they did. They had to personify it just in case we didn't understand that was his deep, dark, bad memory.
Personal demons.
Okay, so they grow up and Will becomes a meteorologist. Breeze apparently is drifting through life, in my opinion, trying to redeem himself.
Oh, no, he's a repairman. And the coolest setup he's got is that his apartment is right over his garage. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I would love a setup like that if my house was right over my garage, like, and I had a garage that big. I think Breeze is probably living the life he wants to live.
I think he's an alcoholic because they sort of set it up that way. I mean, he's getting up at, you know, in the middle of the day. The first thing he does is get some vodka out of the freezer.
You're
or
faulting Breeze
like that.
For that. I'm faulting the writers because they had to fall into that cliche. You know, they couldn't develop it any other way. It's just, a repairman. You know, it's actually an insult to all repairmen. Just because a dude's a repairman doesn't mean he, like, wasted his life. That's what they're trying to say, like, some cliche-ridden
thing.
No,
they're not. I don't think that they're saying repairman are
no, I think the Christmas movie have
specifically
discriminate against repairmen. And I guarantee you, when they take their cars into the shop, they treat the repairmen poorly. And I actually have an issue with it. And I think we should boycott this movie because of that.
No, that's not at all what is happening here. They needed him to be a washout burnout. And they also needed him to be literally the only person in the town that could repair whatever it is that saves or that the terrorists needed him to repair. They needed him to be a repairman, and they also needed him to be like a washout.
I'm with you on the repairman thing,
but
why does he need to be a washout? That has no bearing on anything.
No, what? Yes, it does. He carries his guilt with him his entire life.
You can
life.
Have guilt and so not he, be a washout burnout.
No, but for him, he did become a washout because he carried that guilt with him his whole entire life. He never achieved any sort of greatness.
He's the greatest repairman ever made. And he can repair anything.
That's why he stayed to help them. That's why he stayed. He didn't even need to get involved in any of this. When he goes and helps Casey.
Nobody in this movie
needed
to be involved in anything in the movie, though.
Well, I totally agree with that to begin with. But he could have just taken that car and driven off and gotten his brother and left. But he has to redeem himself. He has that little bit of hero in him because they kind of allude to that with his military service. So he is trying this whole movie to redeem himself and to prove himself worthy because he feels so guilty that he caused his dad to die and the rift between him and his brother because
of
it.
Does he feel guilt? Sure. But I view him more as a nihilist. He just doesn't care. Like, nothing matters. He realizes in the cosmic picture of the universe, nothing really matters. Whether he repairs the thing or not, it doesn't matter. Whether there's a hurricane or not, it doesn't matter. He'll die when it's his time. So he just goes with the flow.
Oh, wow. I didn't. Okay. You know what? It's been 24 minutes and we haven't even gotten to Casey and Corbin. So let's just chug this along. Casey and Corbin.
Well,
okay, Casey the girl.
We need to talk about the introduction of the truck because that truck really is something else.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Talk to me about the truck.
Exterior roll cage, all kinds of lights and switches, buttons and screens. And I really wish we just spent more time on the truck, because who knows what else that truck could do. We only saw, maybe half the switches activated. It's amazing.
It was really cool. It was really cool. Yeah.
And really, this truck probably should have a credit, you know, starring Toby Kebbell, Maggie Grace, and the truck. What did he call it? The Demolisher? Or something.
He did call it something. I didn't write it down because I was just calling it the Batmobile. So.
All right.
But yes. Okay. Casey and Corbin, partners, driving all this money to the treasury to be shredded. It's old money that's going to be shredded. And Corbin is this Irish dude. He's Irish, I think.
Yeah, he's Irish.
And he's going to retire. That's his dream. He wants to retire. And so we get a glimpse of these two. Our first impression of Casey is her, I guess they wanted to make her a bit of a badass and her like against the grain because they're sitting in traffic because everyone's trying to evacuate.
I want to talk about that for a minute. Because we get a we get a pan of the road up to the trucks.
Yeah.
And every other car is at such an angle. I thought, what were they doing before they stopped? Did they come skidding to a stop?
Yes.
Were they zigzagging, pretending they were NASCAR?
Yes.
I mean, it is Alabama. Maybe they're pretending they're NASCAR racers. I get it's for visual effect, but if you think about it for any amount of time, it's so stupid.
It was like they were all driving 90 miles an hour and instantly stopped and had to swerve to not hit the car in front of them. Each car was zigzagged on this one-way road, and then you see there was an accident, and then you see Casey and Corbin in their giant truck, and there's like three of these giant green trucks carrying the money, and Casey's getting impatient. So what does Casey do? Because we have to establish her
as
a
cowboy
badass. Cowboy cop. I like that. Cowboy cop. She rams the cars and cuts them off and then goes through a field, which I just thought was very stupid and irresponsible. And I didn't like her from the beginning and it never really changed. So,
you know, I didn't look very closely, but I know Perkins references that she's tearing through somebody's tobacco field, which being in the South is an appropriate crop. I didn't look hard, but it didn't really look like tobacco in the glance I saw.
No, no. They were just referencing the fact that she had no problem cutting through someone's personal property to get her money where it needed to be. I guess we were just, she's just like this cop who's so determined to get that money into the safe before the hurricane, I guess.
Those trucks.
So she's just going to knock trucks. Yeah.
You could not make them more conspicuous if you tried. Military camo green and black. Why didn't they just leave
they're
in
huge.
Normal trucks? Like, if I had seen a truck like that on the road, I'd be like, there is something in that truck. Either an alien, money, or a SWAT team.
And there's four of them just,
three.
You know, chilling down
three?
The road. Yeah.
Well,
oh, maybe three.
But one thing I was disappointed I didn't come back to is that it's her truck, Casey's truck, the one she's driving. There is a mounted machine gun in the back with army dudes. And that never makes another appearance.
You're right.
I mean, I wouldn't think that'd be standard practice to have a mounted machine gun if you're just hauling old money. I don't know. But it never makes an appearance. Mm. And later, it's alluded to in the very end that all these trucks are packed with money, which makes sense because they had half the money they're carrying, half the money is at the plant. What do they do with that mounted machine gun?
Well, I imagine if anyone tries to rob them, they have to protect themselves.
But
wouldn't
you want the machine gun with the actual money? It seems it's in a separate truck. You need a degree of coordination to even, you know, if you're attacked.
Yeah, you're trying to, you know, put some logic in this movie. We're going to need to stop that.
It's true.
Because
what?
We're getting to the point where they're at the treasury.
The reason there's a machine gun in the truck is like, oh, you know what would be cool? Put a machine gun in the truck. That'd be awesome, dude. Should we come back to it later?
That's pretty much.
I don't know. If I remember, maybe we will. If I forget about it, we won't.
Okay, we got to set up this robbery. We got to move it towards the robbery part. So they're in the treasury, we see a little look of the treasury. The first thing is that the shredder is down. The shredder is not working.
Well, they said something like the shredder's offline. And I thought, okay, is that just a euphemism or is it really online? Because it's really online. Why? And that this whole thing, like this building is more connected than Fort Knox. Everything is online. And I get it's to push the plot along, but I really feel like they needed some kind of reason because even the generator's online and the computer is able to diagnose the problem so quickly that I'm like, wow, we need to get on this technology. Whatever they have, we need to share that.
Yeah, well, they have a cell phone tower. That's where all this power comes from.
Cell phone towers don't work like that.
In this movie, they do.
I will say,
later
the
on,
hackers,
we
get some hackers. They're there to like get the shredder back
okay,
online.
Okay, let's talk about these
they
hackers
They are awesome.
For a
they are the unsung heroes of this movie.
So hang on 1 second. So yes, they have to hire outside help. Well, supposedly outside help. They're obviously the bad guys. And just for a second, I want to talk about wardrobe, because we get these two hackers. I don't know where they came from. I don't know where the treasury guy found them from, but they're dressed in formal wear.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least she is.
No, they're both
dressed. She's dressed like she's going, to like a New Year's Eve event, right? So that's their clothing situation.
And I like
that.
Like, that's what made me like them. Like, they're hackers of a particular style, and they own it. I like it.
But they're not like they're
do they blend in? No, not at all.
In the movie. Like, in the movie, they really don't even say what they are or where they came from or where he found this help from. But clearly he doesn't know them or has ever worked with them before. So he calls them and is like, you gotta come help me with the shutter. And they show up dressed to go to a ball. And I just was wondering who put them in those clothes. What was the costume designer thinking? Putting her in like a sequins dress and high heels. And it just, I don't know. Actually, a lot of the wardrobe bothered me in this movie.
A lot.
How Breeze was, yeah, because Breeze was in his like stereotypical Hawaiian shirt. We have Will, who is in distressed jeans. And I just have to say, please, guys, never wear distressed jeans. It's not a good look. I don't know who decided that men should be wearing distressed jeans, but I firmly believe they should not. So
maybe he's
like,
in a hailstorm, though, and the hail just like hit his jeans so hard it shredded them.
No, they were strategically distressed. This is a man who went to the Gap and spent $89 on a pair of jeans that already have holes in them. So, I mean, I was really distracted by them. Because I guess in movies it's very stereotypical that the hackers have to stand out or be really cool or superior to everybody else.
I liked it. I just assumed that Perkins went to Silk Road on the dark web, found them, hired them, was like, yo, this is what I need. What can you do? And they're like, yeah, we got you, dog.
It was just stupid of him to even bring them into it.
Why? You need somebody to get that shredder online.
But where? We never established where they came from. You're working at a treasury with billions of dollars. You should have some reputable tech.
I'm sure they were off
call.
The Silk Road, and, you know, he vetted them. And, like, I mean, your rep is everything on the Silk Road. So, you know, they would be cool.
Well, I'll go with that. I'll go along with it.
The movie doesn't say that. That's just my assumption. But at this point, when we got into the short, I'm like, what was that movie that was dealing with shredded money in a heist? It was Logan Lucky. It's just weird we have another shredded money heist so quickly after that one.
Because it's such an awesome idea.
I mean, Logan Lucky, that wasn't a great movie. It was better than this, though.
I
will say, Southern accents in that movie, much better than this movie.
Okay, so Casey comes in, and she is very, very worried about this money sitting there during the hurricane. And we have to, of course, establish that she has some sort of shady past. So she is on her tablet talking to some military guy, I guess some DC military guy. And she's asking to make the code on the safe a different number because she's worried about security.
I don't know these people.
Exactly. And he brings up her past in Utah, whatever that means right now. So we, of course, have to know that she has something that she's trying to overcome to build her character. So she gets her code redone. And that's really the important thing. She has changed the code on the safe. Messing up the plan. Dun, dun, dun.
I don't know if her past is the dumbest thing in this movie, but it's definitely one of the nominees. Like, just, it's the problem with this movie is all the characters are so cliche. You know, she's the cowboy cop with the past.
Yeah.
And they string that out so far and so long. I knew it would be stupid. I'm not sure they ever say. Like, eventually, you know, they allude something happened. They say she killed somebody. I'm not sure if they ever explain how that happened. It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I know, well, I feel like they tried to have a heart-to-heart moment with her and Will in the Batmobile sometime in the middle of the storm when it's completely inappropriate for her heart-to-hearts. And she made a comment that she made a bad call and someone died. But you're right. I don't know if they ever explained beyond that what that was.
I mean, did she like, yo, dude, this peanut sandwich is like, contains no peanuts. Totally
yes!
cool to eat. Like,
I can't wait to talk about the peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You know,
is it Jif peanut butter? Nope.
There are a couple things I like about this movie, though. Because most movies, like, the expulsion of fluids, like, they skip over that. Like, in Die Hard, dude never pees or anything, like, the entire movie. In this, like, yo, you want to take a pee break?
No.
Yeah, I could do that.
Hate
they eat. Like, you never see heroes eat in a movie. They getting down those PB&Js.
They were devouring sandwiches. The pee break was ridiculous.
I loved it.
The sandwich break was ridiculous.
I love that, too. I mean, because it's like we're trying to build a character. All his sandwiches are labeled by day. So I mean, is he just on the field that long? Is there something more to this? The movie doesn't know. It has no clue what that means. It leaves it up to you to make it up. But they're like, yo,
so
man,
stupid.
What kind of peanut butter is this? What kind of jelly? I loved it. Probably my favorite scene.
So
it means
stupid.
Absolutely nothing, though.
I hope they were just improvising. I hope they were just, like, having a chit-chat about their peanut butter sandwiches. Okay, take a second.
I mean, with how the rest of this movie is directed, I could easily see the director saying, look, I don't care, dude. Just figure it out. Do something. The camera's rolling.
Yeah, exactly. Is this Jif? No. Is it Skippy? Love Skippy peanut butter.
Yeah, you know, I'm
like,
a Skippy
oh
kind of guy.
What is happening? Okay, Casey has now have the new safe combination on her tablet. She hides the tablet in the Treasury Department in a stack of old shredded money. I don't know why she does this.
I mean, because you don't want to be lugging that thing around all the time.
Well, she's already suspicious. So I feel like, why not keep it on her? Because isn't the safest place for that code going to be with her? She stops and you know she's suspicious of things going on. And she... So she gets rid of, I don't know, it was weird. I know that they needed to do it for the story.
But they really didn't though. I mean, I just thought that'd play a bigger part, that they'd be searching for it. But it's like, oh yeah, I don't know. She could have kept it with her the whole time and it wouldn't have made a difference in the story at all.
Well, that's true, because they do end up catching her and so.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd been searching for it or something, and that, you know what? The reason they did anything with it, because if they'd been searching for it, that would have created tension, and this movie is allergic to that. We surely can't have tension.
Yes. I have some questions coming up, though. Okay.
This movie is one big question. How does weather work? Tell me about hurricanes.
Well, my big question is, did they wait until a massive hurricane came to rob the Treasury Department? Or were they planning on robbing the Treasury Department and a massive hurricane just happened to coincide with their plans and they used it as a cover? Which was
That's
it?
A very good question. There's differing answers to that because the movie doesn't even know. But this is how I took it. I don't know. The movie says a lot of things. But Perkins, at one point he references, sometimes you just get lucky. And I didn't know if they got lucky that there's a hurricane or they got lucky that the hurricane is where it is. But it seemed to me that they knew a hurricane was coming and it would at least cover their track somewhat. Now, I don't think they could predict it any more than they did, but in this movie, who knows? Because Will probably could have charted like every foot the hurricane would have moved. But I feel like they knew the hurricane was going to be there. I don't know if they knew exactly the path.
So they had everything in place and then they were like, we just need a hurricane? Because at some point, one of them says, we gambled on the storm. And I don't know if that means they were like, they had everything planned ahead of time and they gambled that the storm would cover them or that they gambled. Yeah. I don't know.
Did they
understand.
Gamble the storm would cover them or did they gamble the storm would exist? Which is the gamble?
Yeah. Because if they're waiting for a hurricane, I feel like that's terrible planning on their part.
But I mean, I think the hurricane has to be involved because otherwise, what is their cover? Like, there's no way for them to escape if there is no hurricane. So they had to be waiting for something.
So they waited for a hurricane?
I mean, is it Alabama? A hurricane's just very frequent in Alabama?
Well, in the Gulf, there might be more hurricanes. It's not like they were on Florida. Like, if they were in Florida in hurricane season, okay, you're expected to get a couple hurricanes. In the Gulf, I don't know, because I don't really pay attention to that region as much. But even so, they would really have to bank on that hurricane. I don't know. It was.
Do you think
weird.
Perkins like pulled a Godfather thing where he's like, one day, and this day may never come, I'm going to need a favor? Because he set up a pretty big network.
I mean, it was pretty crazy. Yeah. Because we learn very, very... You're right about this tension thing. Because we learn instantly that Connors is a bad guy. Connors is working with the local cop. The local cop has people working for him. Like, there's no tension on who the bad guys are. It is just, we meet a person, we find out instantly if they are part of the heist or not part of the heist. So there's no tension in that at all. I agree with that. Okay.
One aspect of the bad guy, like, are we to the point of introducing the bad guy and him introducing himself?
I have one more question about Will, because Will goes and talks to his brother and tries to convince Breeze to leave. I just don't know where Will has been, because I don't know where he lives, because he tells Breeze that he sent him airplane tickets and cash. But he also is talking to the meteorologist and he's saying, I'm home, I'm home. But he also tells his brother he hasn't seen him in 5 years. So does he live in Alabama or does he live in some other undisclosed location? Or is he just trying to send his brother away on like some trip?
Breeze, I want the house, man. I need you out of here. I want the repair shop. I want it all.
He has to live in Alabama. He's down there with the Batmobile.
But, all right, this is my take. And the movie does not really give any definitive answers. But I took it as Will, like, him telling his station he's home is just like, I'm in my hometown. I took it as the only reason he's down there is that's where the hurricane is. With a truck like that, you go where the hurricane is. You don't, like, go for a Sunday drive. And who knows where he lives? We don't know. But I just assume with that truck, they're like, yo, Will, if there's a storm, you're headed towards it. I just assumed he lives out of that thing. Because I would.
Okay. All right. It just bothered me when the airplane tickets came up. That was very distracting to me. When he was like, said to Breeze, I sent you airplane tickets and money. And Breeze was like, see you in another 5 years. He said that later on. And I was just like, where are these brothers? Where have they been doing for the past 5 years? It was confusing.
Well, even if Will had a static address. I can't see Breeze wanting to fly to Will, so where would those plane tickets take him?
Exactly.
Is it a vacation? Did you just think like, oh, you're a repairman, yes. You probably have no money for a good vacation. I'm a PhD meteorologist. I'll take you on a good vacation. Who knows?
Like, that was my first thought, was like, geez, he's like sending him away? How is that helpful? Yeah, it was weird.
He really didn't like Breeze. Talk about the bad I think that's guys. Like your subconscious talking. You just want to get rid of Breeze because you don't like him.
I also didn't like how they dyed his hair. Listen, if you
was
naturally have
dyed?
Dark brown hair. Oh, yeah, listen. If you naturally have dark brown hair, I have naturally dark brown hair and it's been bleached. You can tell if dark brown hair has been bleached. It turns yellow and golden if it's not done properly and not done with a lot of patience over several sessions.
What,
of
you're
time.
Saying this movie and was not patient in how they
always,
prepared his hair?
You can always tell when someone with dark brown hair has got their hair bleached blonde. And this was like a prime example and it drove me crazy. I'm like, oh, just let him have brown hair.
What should
hair.
His hair look like?
Just let him have brown hair. They're
but like, if he had natural blonde hair, what should I have seen? Because I just thought the dude hadn't showered for a week or two or three.
Oh, no. Okay, who has natural blonde hair? I can't even think of somebody with natural blonde hair right now. Does any actor have natural blonde hair?
Guy Pearce? I don't think it's natural blonde. I don't know.
Brad Pitt, maybe, from back in the day?
Albino people have blonde hair.
Yes, but it's like a more goldeny kind of a pale, whereas there's a very orange underhue to somebody who has dark, dark hair and just gets it bleached over, especially once, one time, getting it bleached over. It will turn orange.
I know a dude that has blonde hair, an actor, but I don't know his name.
Okay.
Yeah, I know it's not very much help. His name might start with an N.
Okay, perfect.
Neil McDonough. He has blonde hair.
Oh, I don't even know who that is. Out of all the people that you and I could try to come up with. McDonough? Who? Oh, is that real? Oh, I don't know. That's very, very, very blonde hair. But look at the difference between, like, his hair and the guys in this. Like, the guy in this movie, it's orange-based. That's somebody
who has dark
hair.
You're saying
a dude
can't have orange hair? I mean, doesn't hair come in all colors?
But all I'm saying, listen, I have pink hair right now. I'm not against multicolored hair. But if you're going to be in a movie and you're going to try to sell someone as blonde, like, do it right. Like, you know, put some effort into
they
it.
Sold
and it always
me.
Takes me out. As a moment, there's always a moment where I'm always like, ugh.
It's like all the Hurricane stuff, completely cool with that. His hair, deal killer.
It was unrealistic, Ward. It took me out of the movie instantly.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That would do it.
Okay, bad guys. Let's talk bad
all right,
guys.
Like their introduction, I wish they did more with this. I mean, but they roll out and they're stun gunning people. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Normally they just shoot them. Wonder what the deal there is. And really there's not a deal. The guy just, he doesn't want to kill people, but he's not against killing people. He has to.
Well, later, once they kill his lady friend, then he gets pissed off and starts killing people.
Yeah, and I really believe their relationship.
Because we didn't even know about the relationship until she died. And then he's like, oh, Wanda, whatever her name is.
Before, I'm like,
oh, I didn't
okay,
even
sure,
notice.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie twice and I haven't even noticed.
I mean, I like that guy was in on it because he seemed like this really introspective kind of, you know, he seemed kind of villainy. He needed more monologues. That probably would have helped.
Or like you said, they could have at least had him go along so we didn't know he was in on it until a little bit later in the movie. There was no suspense. Everybody who we think is good, who's bad, we find out instantly that they're bad. And I think that was a missed opportunity.
I mean, I think his motto is just get rich or die trying. Go for it.
Get rich or die.
Yeah, one thing I like, I'm jumping ahead, but I'm thinking about it now, so I'm gonna mention it. Like, the sheriff's in on it, and he starts, he starts this classic villain monologue where, well, I was in a bar talking to somebody, and Perkins is like, you idiot, I was right there with you, why are you telling me this? And I actually like that part, because we always get that villain monologue, and I love they shut it down like that.
Instantly. I did enjoy that very, very much.
Probably the funniest and cleverest thing in this movie by a wide margin.
Really? Not them stopping for a pee break or talking about Jif?
That was funny, not so much clever, but funny.
Okay, all right. So, yes, you're right about the bad guys. They are stunning people. We find out very quickly, Connor says, see, look, I told you we can do this without killing people. So for whatever reason, he has decided he doesn't want to kill anybody, which is fine. I respected that. I thought that was good.
I just wish
that,
like, there's more
to
it. Like, he had, like, some kind of, you know, philosophy on life or something. Or I don't know.
Sure,
I just wish there was, like,
nice.
Some underlying reason other than, like, I don't want to kill, but I will kill, but I don't want to. Unless I need to.
Or even if, like, he just didn't want to kill his friends. Like, he's known these people forever. And, you know, like, yeah, anything.
Or,
he
I mean, I guess maybe this is part of it. He wanted hostages. I mean, they don't really come into play. But he did have hostages, so that is some leverage.
Yeah, that's true.
But he
true.
Never says,
I could go with that.
I'm leaving them alive for hostages. Like, I just don't like to kill people. So I don't really know if that's what they're going for or not. Speaking of hostages, they're in a storage cage. It's very common, like these kind of buildings, like a chain link storage cage. And when they need it to be electrified, doggone if it isn't electrified. Who knows why?
I was going to ask you.
And of course they can activate it from the computer. This building is, like, I guarantee you could control anything in this building on the computer. It is amazingly well connected.
Yes, I was curious about that as well. I thought that was fantastic. Okay, let's go back. Because now we are full swing into the robbery. They have taken over. They really need that code to open up the safe. They now know that Casey is the only one who has the code because they're using their hacker abilities and they're trying to get in and they can't get in. They know it's been saved. All right, Casey finds out that something terrible has happened because she drives up to the building and sees all of these, incapacitated people.
Well, technically she's not seeing anybody incapacitated. There's nobody there. Like, there should be a guard on duty.
Nobody's there.
And then she sees a bullet hole and the window's blown out of the little guard
house. And the window's blown up. Here's why I still don't like her. At that point, I feel like she should have gotten into the car, which breezes in, by the way, because she's picked him up because he's the only person in the world who can save the generator. And she should have called for backup or left or done something. But she by herself goes and investigates all of this and almost gets herself killed and almost gets Breeze killed. And I just thought that was very unprofessional. Well, or maybe not.
An important note, Breeze does not care if he dies. He's a nihilist. See,
oh
it all
gosh.
Plays in, man. You just got to pay attention.
I don't know. You're giving Breeze a lot of backstory that I don't feel
Somebody needs to give the man backstory. The writers didn't do it. I feel I had to take it upon myself.
You can, but you're giving him a lot more depth than I feel like even the actor playing it thought that the character
he wants to call him for the next sequel. He's like, I like that man's ideas. I'm gonna get in on that.
But Breeze immediately steps up to the plate. Like, he gets the car and he like drags it around, like does like a 360 and opens the door for her and she gets in and they rush off. And like, now he's, I guess, invested. And really at that point he should have just left. Like, he should have just got Will and left town.
But see,
none
Breeze is along the
road.
Like, whatever happens. Breeze is like, yeah, well, I don't know about this, but hey, I'm along for the ride. I'm just going to go with it.
Well, I think it's more that he's trying for redemption. He's trying to do one good thing to make, or a lot of good things, really, to make up for the past.
No, I think Breeze is along for the ride, man. Whatever happens, happens.
Okay.
But here's one thing that puzzled me for a little bit, because my first question was, a few minutes later, Will goes to the Treasury Department. And my question was, well, why did Will go there? He had no reason to go there. And I thought, okay, maybe he's checking on Breeze. And then this is weird, because then I thought, well, why didn't Breeze just drive to the Treasury Department? Like, I get that Maggie Grace wanted somebody there fast, but it still seems weird to just throw some dude in your car and take him. I mean, she goes, hey, you're a repair dude. You probably have like a 4x4 truck to get over here, or do you need a ride? I don't know. It just seemed weird then that she gave him a ride. But the fact is, they needed Will at the Treasury Department, so this is kind of an easy way to do that, even though if you think about it, it doesn't make sense. Because my first thought was, why is he there? Like, wouldn't he just drive and do meteorology things? Who knows? But they needed him there to set up that relationship between Will and Maggie Grace.
Yes.
And you know what? Yes. She's got a great actor name, Maggie Grace. It's a good name.
Maggie Grace. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm glad that you like her actor name. That's great. If you ever meet her, be sure to tell
her. I doubt that's her real name. That's probably like her first and middle name. She probably changed her name.
Probably
just,
so. I imagine
most people don't have a
situation.
Name just that smooth.
Right, right.
Other than Tom Mapother. So I don't know why he changed that
okay,
name.
Okay, we are off topic again. Let's try to reel it back.
But, at this point, when Toby Kebbell showed up at the Treasury Department, I just thought, Toby's better than this. I feel bad for him.
Toby's better than
he
this.
He is.
In my notes, I kind of skip ahead to the part where she and Will are in the Batmobile driving and the bad guys are following them and he locks it down in the cement and they have that crash. Did I miss anything between?
Yeah, the lead up to that is just so infuriating because it's so stupid. So they're driving. I mean, the bad guy, I don't know why. Oh, yeah, because she's shooting the bad guys. I don't know what happened to Breeze, because Breeze saved her from the car.
Is he there already? Has he been taken?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
He's working on the generator?
Yeah, somehow he picked her up in the car. Somehow she got out. They captured him. Will shows up. She gets in his car. I mean, she'll just get in anybody's car. And then they're driving. They're being chased. So anyway, they're driving. And I'm just puzzled as to how this little crappy car can keep up with the tank. I mean, I would think the tank would be long gone. But, you know, plot armor and stuff like that. So Will turns her and says, "Do you trust me?"
And then I wrote this down.
Dumbest piece of dialogue he could possibly say. Yep. There's not a single thing dumber than this. He's like, "I need you to trust me." And she's puzzled. You know, I feel like she is like the audience incarnate. What is this man saying? What does it have to do with anything? He's like, "I need you to trust me." It's just the stupidest dialogue you
put. Yep.
We'll skip over that. He locks this truck into concrete, which is just awesome. And
that was so cool.
And he's like, "Hey, remember when I told you there's going to be a harsh part? This is the harsh part." And the car careens off the tank and goes flying and people die. Yep. But man, that dialogue. Well, they should have died. But that dialogue is just so infuriating. Here's another thing. Talking about tension. You have a hurricane. Category 5. Best of the best of the hurricane. I really would have liked if the hurricane was kind of nonchalantly picking the bad guys off one at a time, because nobody really dies. Like, oh, they're in this terrible car crash, but they're okay. There's no real danger. I mean, Will can run through the street with 100-mile-per-hour winds, not a care in the world. He probably would have been whistling as he walked if we'd actually seen that scene.
Well, he climbs up a cell phone tower while boats are flying through the air because of this so-called hurricane.
Yeah.
And he has the ability to walk from a car, climb up a building, climb up a tower while we're in horrific hurricane force. Like, none of it makes sense. They're shooting guns. They're, like, it's just all of it's nonsense. Well, so you just have to kind of believe, you have to suspend the belief of the hurricane.
Here's my train of thought as he was climbing that tower. Because I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, we're going to hook the cable to the tower, pull it down, cool, that's great. Well, then he starts going up. I'm like, well, why wouldn't he tie the cable to the base? I'm like, oh, wait, no, leverage. Tied at the top, more leverage, easier to pull it down. That's cool. Then he ties to the ladder. I'm like, come on. All that's going to do is rip the ladder off the tower, and the tower's going to be there. Like, that's the weak point. So I didn't like that at all. I mean, aside from the fact that the wind is strong enough to throw boats around, which means it can be throwing all kinds of things around. Which means Will does not stand a chance. And this leads me to my biggest issue with this movie. I believe it's after Will gets down. The wind is so strong, it is throwing cars around the street. Does Will falter while walking? No, not a one of these guys falters while walking, despite the fact cars are like tumbleweeds down the street. That's my biggest issue. I mean, at least have him stutter step or do something. Nothing.
Not only are they running like normal and taking cover like normal, but Will throws hubcaps.
Oh, that was amazing. It's stupid, but amazing. Like, I will give them credit for coming up with that idea.
So fun. He was throwing hubcaps like boomerangs, and they were hitting the bad guys. That was
He straight up murdered a bad guy with a hubcap.
He did, with a hubcap. That was awesome. Okay, so that's.
But I just thought, I don't know. Aren't the winds going all over the place? Like, wouldn't one or two of them come back at him? I mean, it's not like they all. The wind's not going all one way, is it?
Well, they would all be dead instantly. The fact that anyone would be driving in that storm besides the Batmobile is preposterous. They don't have proper trucks. Like, they're just driving regular trucks or military trucks, even, I think, would be not so great in that weather. Or just like basic four-door sedans. None of it makes sense. None of it.
Oh, when I'm driving on the highway and like a 20-30 mile per hour gust of wind hits me, you feel it. Like, your car kind of does a shimmy. In winds like this, it's going to present an issue. Throughout this whole thing, I was thinking about, are you familiar with comedian Ron White?
No.
Well, he's a very funny comedian. And he had some bit about how some guy was telling him how, you know, he can run really far and he could run a marathon in a hurricane. And Ron said, well, that's true. But here's the thing. It's not that you can run in the hurricane. It's that this hurricane is windy and it's throwing things at you. Maybe you can run a marathon in a hurricane. You can't run a marathon with a street sign in your spleen. And I feel like Ron would have had an issue with this movie because there's lots of things flying around that just miss these guys. And we're going to get into one action sequence that is amazing that encapsulates all that about how they were not maimed in so many different ways. But we're not there yet, so we'll just keep rolling.
No. Okay. Well, I never really fully understood this whole cell phone tower business. The only way that the bad hackers could get any sort of online service was through this one cell phone tower in the town. Is that right?
Yeah, and
that's why they decided to destroy it. Okay, because the hackers were using it to try and hack into, I guess, DC's mainframe and get the code instead of having to get Casey back.
That's what they tell. Well, no, because they were using an encryption device at one point to get Casey's code. But you're right. They didn't mention DC. Who knows? There's a lot going on with that. Okay. And I would think that, I don't know, a hurricane might block cell phone signal.
That's what I, like, I was very confused by the technology. I'm not a technical person, so I was kind of like, maybe it could happen. I don't know.
I mean, in this world, sure, it could happen. In the real world, no.
Probably not. Okay.
Well, in the real world, the hurricane probably would have already taken that satellite dish right off the tower anyway. They wouldn't even have to pull it down. The wind would take care of that for them.
You're absolutely right. I mean, literally a boat flies past them. So, yeah, I think that that would have been off a long time
But, you know,
ago.
That boat hits the tower. Will is holding on to a wet cable and 100-mile-per-hour wind climbs right up. No problem. I'd probably have I would have problems climbing up that cable in normal weather, much less when it's windy and raining.
That actually reminded me of Twister in the final scene where she and someone are holding on to some sort of rod that's in the ground, and they're holding on with a leather belt.
Was that the last? I thought that was the first scene. All right, it's been a long time since seeing Twister, but my memory was, I might be making this up, but I thought like the first scene opened with some hurricane hitting Helen Hunt when she was young. Maybe I'm just transposing this with the hurricane heist, but I just remember seeing this image of like she's holding onto a pipe and everything around them is demolished.
This is she was an adult holding onto a pipe with some sort of like leather belt around her waist, and the tornado goes over and there's like the eye of the tornado. But anyways, this scene with Will holding onto the cable reminded me of that scene because I was like, this is absurd. There's no way you could just hold on by some sort of flimsy material through hurricane or tornado winds. This is absurd. You and I have both experienced hurricane winds. Like, I mean, we've been around
they're
hurricanes.
They're pretty serious.
Like, they're pretty serious. Like, and there's, we're not even like close to the eye of it. Like, this is preposterous. That made me mad as well that he's on this stinking cable. And then Casey goes and she's just chilling outside the Batmobile, unleashing the cable so that they could be free from the tower. She's having no trouble at all either. I think you're right. They should have had the hurricane act as a sort of villain or anti-hero or something and started picking off bad guys. Wait. Or had them. Oh my gosh, I think I know. I just remembered the mall scene. Is that the scene that you're talking about?
Like, if you think this tower scene is bad, just wait. They encapsulate everything at the mall. It is so ridiculous.
I just remembered the mall scene.
But you know, the cool thing is, if the hurricane was somehow sentient, it could explain like how some people have no problem with the wind because the hurricane would be like, yo, you're cool. I'm going to leave you alone. Don't like you.
Yeah.
Going to murder you with a hubcap.
Yeah. I think they missed some opportunities with that.
Well, at least it would make sense of the nonsensicalness of this movie.
Sure.
So, yeah the mall scene. Holy cow. I mean, top to bottom, I think every facet of that sequence is ridiculous and makes no sense.
I just can't handle that scene. Where was Breeze when the ceiling busted out? When she shot that flare gun into the ceiling and they go flying up, connected by nothing but cables, and miraculously survive... Where was Breeze?
Well, see,
where was he at?
Toby Kebbell gave him the heads up, gave him some football play, because football play is always
saying
the day.
That's what he said. He said, go long. That was it.
And see,
go
if
long.
I was a cop there, I'd be like, that seems
that's
fishy.
Suspicious.
I'm concerned. Like, it's Alabama. People always talk about football plays, right? So Breeze just runs and grabs onto a door frame, and that's cool. Like, he's completely fine.
Because apparently you can grab onto anything in the middle of, like, a Category 5 hurricane, and you will be fine. Just anything.
But, I mean, there's a lot I want to unpack on this scene. I mean, first off the very idea that, we're going to get into a low-pressure system where the pressure outside the mall is greater than inside the mall. First off, I just think the roof of the mall and the parts of the mall would have been flying off long before that happened.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Giving the movie that... go ahead.
Yeah, okay. That's generous. Okay,
like, given the movie that. What would have been cool is, and I mean, part of me is like, well, I don't know if this is logical, but I'm talking about the hurricane heist, so who cares about logic? How cool would it be if that skylight, instead of them having to shoot it, like, they know it's a low-pressure system, they know that glass is not designed to withstand that kind of force. Like, have the glass crack,
yes.
So they're just waiting for the glass to crack, and so, like, you can cut back and forth to the glass and to them, they're kind of, like, starting to make it happen. Again, that'd be tension. This movie does not like tension for some reason.
You're right. That would have been really good. I would have liked that. Yes, that is not what we got. No.
Got a few more complaints, though, about this. So, like,
please.
You know, they get the safety harnesses. Safety first. Good for them. They tie themselves off with the rope, which is cool, but the rope, it's I don't know, like a camping store or something. There's like a little spool of
rope.
Yeah,
it's like a cable.
They don't take that cable. They don't take that rope or cable and attach it to something attached to like the foundation or frame of this thing. They leave it on the spool. That spool is not designed for any amount of force. Like a small child could yank that spool right off the wall. Somehow this spool withstands gale force hurricane winds. Amazing enough, though, before that even happens, you know, the glass breaks, they fly through the skylight. It is like an act of God that they don't hit the frame and break their backs immediately.
Yep.
Aside from that, they go through the window. There are millions of things flying in the wind that we see. They don't get hit. What happened?
No, not even scratches.
What happens is if you're in like the hurricane, you may get a bloody nose and your forehead may bleed a bit.
Yeah, that's
they,
it. Like,
they would have
no
been
gashes,
they would have been Swiss
no,
cheese
yeah.
after this adventure.
There's no glass. Yeah, you're right. It's ridiculous. And then I don't really understand. They ran off the roof and into a window. Why did they run off the roof and into
it's
a window?
Just the quickest way down, man. Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Yeah, I think I didn't understand that. We can still talk about the mall scene, but I also didn't understand where Breeze went after that because he kind of disappears for a couple of scenes and we don't see him again.
I don't know how his story fits in sequence-wise to what we've discussed, but his story as a whole is he's working on the generator. He's trying to escape through another door, which goes nowhere. Then they realize, I can't remember, he fixes the generator. After he fixes the generator, he tries to free the hostages, and that's when they electrify the fence.
So
they throw him
in
the fence, too.
Right, okay.
Because you just can't trust an Alabama truck driving repairman.
But then at the mall, he gets free, he holds on to the door, and then...
disappears, yeah. We don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, like, he just disappears.
Will can't find him, was like, well, hey, I did all I could, I'm done here.
Yeah, that's basically like, okay, Will goes back to the shop, which is still standing, and... perfectly fine. And they're just like, oh, he's not here. I thought he would be here. I guess he thought they'd come back here. Peanut butter and jelly time. Like, it's so weird.
That is exactly it, too. Like, exactly it. I think if somebody's listening to us, they would think, well, that's not how it happens. No, that's exactly how it happens.
Will says, correcto mundo. That is something that he says in this movie. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, you know, when you're a skippy kind of guy, that's just the way you talk.
Correcto mundo. Gosh.
I wonder if someone's like, hey, Toby, what's the dumbest thing you could say in this situation? Let me think about it for a minute. I think I got something.
I just can't believe that that was actually in the movie. Okay, but they do come up with a plan of making a bomb with fertilizer, and so they have to go to the nursery to find fertilizer.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Which is another detour that goes nowhere. That's kind of what really kind of annoys me. Every time they do one of these ideas, it goes nowhere. Like, Breeze trying to, I guess, blow up a door. He was doing something with that generator, trying to save himself. That goes nowhere. This nursery little subplot goes nowhere. It's just very anticlimactic.
Well, I mean...
because that's when they capture Casey.
Like, I get they had to try, but... and I was... It was a nice little fake out because I was very concerned when they said, oh, we need, I don't know what they were going to blow up. I know they're going to use his truck as like the method, but I was really disappointed when they're going to blow up his truck. I'm like, I'm kind of with Will. We need to find a different plan.
Well, I thought that they were going to still do the plan after Casey got taken because they had just spent like 15 minutes of the plot discussing this idea.
Yeah, I never understood the plan. I'm not sure they did either.
Well, I don't understand most of this movie, but I don't think that stops anybody from trying things. So I just,
well, you
know,
it's probably once Casey was taken, was like, I'm not blowing up my truck now.
I know, probably right. And then Breeze just shows up at some point again, like after the nursery.
It's actually quite a critical moment. You know, because at this point in the nursery, because what threw that whole plan off track was that the storm breaks, the waves, you know, were inland,
the
nursery gets flooded. So that's probably why they couldn't do the bomb, because I'm assuming if all that stuff's wet, you're out of luck.
Well, yes, you're right, I forgot.
Will just happens to float right towards his tank, and then Breeze shows up on a boat like, hey, bro, what's up?
Can we talk about this wave? Because if there was ever tension in this movie, it's this wave. Because you see the ocean, you see the wave forming out in the ocean, it knocks over some sort of giant ship, you see it coming on shore. I'm thinking we're talking tsunami-size wave.
Okay? It seems that way.
It is not that way. It busts the nursery, and I'm thinking maybe a couple feet at that point. And then they act like it's a tsunami wave. Like, they can't stand up because they're flailing around and they're latching onto things. And Casey grabs, like, an inflatable raft, you know, whatever. But then Breeze drives his car through it and the water is just tire high.
No, so, he didn't drive through that point because right after...
Oh, no, you're right. The bad guy comes with his truck through the water to get his bad guys. And it's, like level with his wheels. At some point, you can tell that the water is knee-high. And I just felt like that was so stupid. I was like, these people can stand up. If we're in this make-believe world where hurricane-force winds will not knock you off a building, then you can stand up in this water that is not tsunami at all. It's just a giant, maybe like 5-foot wave that knocked out some windows and then dissipates to the point where a truck can drive through it easily.
I mean,
there's no current to that.
Maybe the movie just didn't relay the topography of the area well enough. Maybe the nursery was in a low place.
So they're on a hill,
the truck
is
on top
saying.
Of a hill.
Okay. All right. But the nursery's on a hill.
At some point here, I think, is when Maggie, Grace, and Will realize that, you know, they're going to use the eye of the storm to escape. And, like, this brings a lot of stuff into question because they talked about how the storm was a gamble. So I'm like, well, if they're going to use the eye of the storm to escape, was that planned from the beginning? What part's the gamble here?
See?
And
I don't know.
I mean, because the thing is, the eye of the storm is the center of the storm. So to get in the center, you got to pass through one wall to get in the middle.
Exactly.
How does any of that? I don't know.
Although,
like, yeah, getting in the middle is great, but I don't get how you pass through the wall to get to the middle the first time. You would be dead then.
Well, they are in the middle. They wait for the hurricane to pass over them so that the eye is right on the middle of the treasury, so they never have to drive through.
But how does the wall not destroy the treasury? Like, if one side of the eye is going to destroy the treasury,
really,
how does the other side not destroy it?
I really don't know. There's a lot of things I don't understand.
And there's another thing.
I don't know.
Well, I want to backtrack, because this is something I thought would play into Perkins' whole, like, I don't kill people. When the car hits the tank and goes careening, it's the sheriff and, like, I don't know, the dude's brother. Who cares? But they're like, hey, we need help. I'm like, well, Perkins ain't going to help them. They're dead weight. They're injured. Like, they are no asset. And the storm is going to, like, wash them away. Anyway, I'm like, well, okay.
Yes.
But he goes for him. So, like, oh, maybe he's cleaning up a loose end. But, I mean, that storm, that's going to take care of all the loose ends. So I wasn't sure why go after them. It really doesn't matter.
I agree. I thought that was kind of stupid, too. Okay, so, like you said, the eye is their ticket out of there. They're just going to ride the eye all the way
through. They claim it's their ticket out of there. But, again, how do they know the eye is going to follow major highways? I mean, is it that predictable?
That's their gamble.
I get it's 40 miles wide. That's a very big number. But how do you know it's going where you're going? Or are you just planning to, like, kind of zigzag across roads to stay in the middle of that eye? I don't know.
Why doesn't Connor kill Casey after she opens up the safe? Is this back to his whole, I don't want to kill people? Because he's already killed quite a lot of people.
What happens after that? I don't remember.
Well, the whole...
I remember she opens it, but I don't remember what happens after she opens it.
He takes her. He says, I'm not done with her. They get into the trucks, and then it's the eye of the storm. It's the end of the movie.
I mean, he's rich. She's a pretty girl. Is it that kind of angle?
Ugh, I hope not. I don't know. He just says, I'm not through with her.
That's true. But, yeah, that makes no... Well, I don't know. He doesn't like to kill people, but I don't know why he would take her with her.
It.
Because you easily could just tie her up and leave her.
Yeah.
You know what? Who would Will rescue off the truck later? That's why he has to take her.
Well, yeah.
Because this movie has potentially the greatest action alley-oop murder ever, and I can't wait to get to that. I was like, I gotta play this again, because I don't even know what happened here. I gotta watch this.
That's awesome. Well, they do drive out of the treasury in the eye, so the eye is upon them, and it's time for them to leave. You have Connor, he has taken her hostage, and I think you're right. I think there's four trucks, because at the very end, there's three of them battling it out.
Yeah, but then where's the fourth? There's only three. Three going in, three going out.
Well, the fourth one... Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
Because okay. Will...
Oh, Breeze overtakes one.
Yeah, Will and Breeze hop on a
truck.
Will hops on the second truck, and then Connor Perkins is in the third truck.
Yes. And I would just like to say that Will is not qualified for any of his stunts that he's doing in this entire movie. I don't know where he learned how to exit a moving vehicle, get on the roof, jump from the roof to the back of a semi-truck, climb up, balance himself while that semi-truck is going like 90 miles an hour, swing down, get on the door, and get inside. Where did he learn that?
I just had one question for this sequence. Can the average person pull this off?
I would say no. Also, Breeze, to get on the semi-truck, he basically jumps from the moving car onto the semi with no one driving it. Like, he's like, okay, it's my turn. Opens the door, gets on top of his car, and jumps. But he doesn't even, like, put the gas pedal down.
Yeah.
He just... I was like, you can't, like, I get, okay, maybe they didn't, like, if they put a rock down, it would have accelerated and bumped the truck. But I was like, that has to be a better plan than just saying, okay, my turn, open the door. Because, I mean, it drastically reduced. Yeah.
His truck would have slowed down so fast that he would have face planted on the pavement and been dead.
Yes. Yes. So, well, I mean, obviously he's fine. He made it. They made it. Woo! Crisis averted.
And yeah, but when they jump on the first truck and then they're going up, I would have been crawling on the top of the truck, you know, keep my center of gravity low. They're walking, not even really crouching. I don't think that would work.
They're strolling. No, they're fine. They're fine.
Then again, if 100 mile per hour hurricane winds like don't hurt you, walking on a truck, I guess, is no big deal.
He's a meteorologist, and the other one is an electrician. So obviously they are well equipped for this.
The electrician, he's the world's greatest repairman. He can repair anything.
Okay, you know what? You keep saying that.
Did you realize his tow truck was completely broken, and he repaired it in 10 minutes?
He was the only one left. Only one left in the town, okay? Everybody else evacuated. So we got to stop with this world's best.
This truck scene, like, this is a whole cool sequence. I mean, if you only have 15 minutes and you don't want to watch this movie, but you're kind of curious, just skip to the last 15 minutes. Like, it really, everything you need is here.
It is pretty cool. So they take over the one truck with the hackers, which is so stupid. These hackers, what they're doing inside the truck... Wow, they're chasing a hurricane.
There's like what the 100 mile club? What's the one? The airline club? So there's probably like they're creating their own new club. And I was like, you know, I kind of give them credit. Like the way they're dressed, what they've done, her sitting in his lap while driving, like, why not? Go for it, guys. It is an elusive club. They were almost in it. Unfortunately, one of them got shot, so they didn't make it. So then again, technically, they were alive when we last saw them, weren't they? They were in the truck. They may have had time to get in the club. I don't know. I mean, you only have a few minutes left. Why not?
Oh my gosh, that was so ridiculous. So yes, all right. Breeze overtook the lover's truck, and then it was Will's responsibility to go take the truck that had Casey in it. And Casey's doing her own badass thing within the truck, beating up bad guys. Okay. So he gets in, gets to control the truck. So now you have them both going toward Connor's truck. And I think it's pretty cool what they do. You know, it comes, everything comes full circle. They're awesome football plays. They, all the tension they have as brothers, they're finally working together, doing something good, redeeming the past. They're going to take down Connor, make sure he doesn't get his money. Good, solid, solid stuff. Oh, and the hurricane's chasing them like a half mile behind.
And it is ferocious. But yeah, when Will gets control of the truck, then, you know, they happen to go off road. He's going back on road. And all of this while Maggie Grace is in the back of the truck wrestling the dude. You know, they're trying to shoot each other and stab each other. So it was like, yo, there's a bump coming up or something to that effect. So the truck hits a bump. It goes in the air. While the truck, like for the split seconds in the air, Maggie Grace grabs the rifle, grabs the magazine that had fallen out, puts it in, shoots the bad dude, kicks him into the air. Will then kicks him out the door, and he flies out.
Yep.
And then, while the truck's like still in there in this split second, Maggie Grace gets in the seat and shuts the door. Like, it is such a smooth sequence. I had to watch it twice.
It was pretty cool.
Greatest action alley-oop ever. Like, I don't even know how the physics work on that thing. I want somebody to plot it out. But it's amazing.
It was fun. It was fun. I agree with that. So, yes, they are on their way to get Connor now. All the bad guys are taken care of except the hackers. One of them is shot. The woman's in the back. It's not a big deal. They'll come into effect later on. And then they use their football codes. First of all, they're yelling back and forth between trucks, which I don't think you can hear what someone is saying, yelling back and forth between trucks. We're still in the middle of a hurricane, people, but whatever. So they're yelling back and forth between trucks, saying football plays. And they use their football plays to... I guess, what is it, like, sandwich the truck that Connor is in, and I don't really understand the sequence of events that happens, but basically, we all know Connor dies.
You're not giving a lot of credit to this sequence.
I'm not giving a lot of credit, because I'm blanking on how this whole thing...
Well, I mean, this truck sequence is awesome. I remember every bit of it. You know, the gambit was that, I mean, it's a bit of a risky gambit. I wish they had played with this a little bit more. I mean... It's a 40-mile-wide eye. We've got some time to have some fun with this. But they flank Perkins, and they're both kind of pushing into the truck. betting on the fact that he will break to get out of that. He could have done some other things. It's a bit of a game, but who cares? So then he's behind them, and then they just swerve so he can't pass them.
Yes.
And so while all this is happening, they're slowing down. The wall of the hurricane, which is the most destructive thing ever, even though it passed over the treasury to get in the eye and it didn't hurt anybody, you know, it is rattling his truck. You know, he's worried. Yes. He's cursing up a storm. Yes. And then it...
Yes.
I guess we don't care about spoilers. If you're this far into this review, you actually don't. It somehow opens the back doors of his truck and all the money's just flying out. He's very concerned because this was his life. You know, his whole life plan is ruined now. It then takes the trailer part right off the truck. It goes into the air, loops, and I don't know why Perkins had the witherall to do this, but he leans out the window, looks up in the air, sees the trailer coming down,
right.
Is like, says something to the effect of, oh darn, before it crushes him and his truck and it explodes, and then the wall of the hurricane takes the truck and disperses it.
Yes, and now it's a race between the two brothers to get further enough ahead out of the risk of the hurricane getting them too.
But that's not all.
That's not all. But this was an interesting. I remember this because now Breeze is the one in peril because the truck, I think, the tire or something got busted out.
No, when they were shooting each other, they shot the engine. And
the
engine's been perfectly fine up until this exact moment.
Absolutely. Yes. So he has to get off of this truck or he's definitely going to die. So he forces the female hacker to come and take the wheel and take the gas. And he's like, I'll come back and get you. I'll come back and get you. And he, you know, has to jump from truck to truck. In that moment, though, I felt it was a little inauthentic of his character to go first. Like, I understand that, you know, he has to survive. But I think with everything we've seen of him, he's not a killer. He's not a bad guy at heart. I feel like he would have sacrificed himself for her, even though she was a bad person. I don't know. It just didn't sit right with me that he didn't let her go first.
I'm happy to dispel your concerns with that.
Please do, because I don't want to feel like that.
It's
I
a very,
be happy
it's
with
a very pragmatic thing. Because, see, if he slides out of the seat, she can slide right in. For her to go first, she would have to slide over top of him. And yeah, that's the other dude's girl. You just don't do that. You know, you don't mow another man's lawn. That's what he's up to.
Okay.
So it's really just a gentlemanly thing to do. It's pragmatic.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, and he does reach out again. Like, once he makes this...
Which I was surprised. I didn't think he'd actually reach out because the hackers really aren't good, quote-unquote.
Well, no, they're not.
But I was impressed
people,
that he did reach back. He legitimately attempted to save her.
Yes.
I can't remember what went wrong there. Were
they
just too close to the storm?
The storm... Yeah, I think the storm just... It just got them... In the end, because their truck goes up and they.
But here's an interesting thing: these trucks were side by side. The storm gets one of them.
You're thinking
doesn't get the other
way
one
too
at
hard
all.
About this yet again. Maybe the wall curved a little bit and it just nicked them, and then Will sped super fast away.
Yeah, that of course.
I think my favorite part in this movie was how quickly the hurricane came to an end.
It came to an end.
Oh,
I thought it ended in just driving in the eye.
Well, they're in the eye. All three of them are in it. She makes some joke about going to Mexico
terrible.
All the money. I know. And they're like, oh, maybe we should. And they're like, I'm just joking with you guys. And then they're driving along, and that's it. The storm's done. That's it. It's a beautiful sunset.
Oh, you're right, because Will says some dumb thing about, like, red at night or something. And
yep, that's right. That's exactly what he says. Red
I didn't really pick up that the fact they could see the horizon means the storm is dispersed. Well, that makes almost no sense at all.
Yeah, they all just had to wait like 5 more seconds and, you know, the hackers could have lived. They really just had 5 more seconds and the storm would have just magically disappeared, which I'm pretty sure is scientifically accurate that a Hurricane 5 would just like within 30 seconds just become completely gone, just dissipate into the air.
I mean, honestly, once they made the little Mexico joke, I was just hoping the storm would pick the truck up and we get a Dr. Strangelove thing. What was that guy?
You think so?
Oh, man, what was that Southern guy? Slim Pickens. Like, have you seen Dr. Strangelove?
Yes.
So Slim Pickens dies riding the bomb, you know, like a bucking Bronco. So I really, after the Mexico joke, I just hoped he'd pick the truck up. Maybe they'd ride it like a bucking Bronco into the storm saying yeehaw. I mean, that'd be better than that. The Mexico joke was terrible.
It was stupid. I hated it. We forgot to mention the skull made its appearance again. Yes. Will looks out the window and sees the skull chasing him yet again.
And like
before all this happened.
I mean, I get the thematic point of it, but it's just, it's so on the nose. Oh, wait, there's some part that made me really mad.
Really? Just the one?
Well, it made me really mad. Oh, I get it. Because like even Maggie Grace hated delivering this line. But when they when they're flanking Perkins and they're going to get in front of him, Matt Gary's delivers line almost like this. So what you mean is you're going to flank him so you can get in front of him and slow him down so the storm will take his truck and murder him. Is that what you were saying, Will? Like, she almost delivers it just like that. And it's like, come on, movie. Do you really think that people watching this are so stupid they don't quite get it?
They obviously do. They obviously do.
I mean, this movie commits some sins, but to think I'm that stupid is quite egregious. Yes. But I do appreciate that Maggie Grace delivered the line almost like that, just to underscore that even she thought that was a stupid line.
It was. I agree. All right. Whew. We made it through this awesomeness that I now own. Yep. I will be watching it again. I'll have it on in the background while I do various things.
I was going to say, if you like, were actually going to sit down and watch it, I'd have to question your sanity.
No. I got a 44% on Rotten Tomato, which is not the worst movie that we have seen. So there we go. Not the worst.
It's easily not the worst.
Hurricane Heist. That should be the tagline. The Hurricane Heist. Not the worst.
I think that's all right. Fair.
Yes. Yeah. So it got a 44%. It got a 5 out of 10 on IMDb. And a 1 star from Ebert. He did not like this movie. I can't imagine why.
I know, right? Maybe he missed the ending. Right. I mean, that truck sequence was something else. That's probably why he gave it 1 star. He's going to give it no stars. He's like, that truck sequence, I kind of dig it. 1 star.
Okay, what would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10? Because I know you do 10.
I do a 10. I would probably give it a 4 out of 10.
Okay, so I would do from 1 to 5 because I have to be difficult, and I would give it probably like a 2. You know? But as far as like a disaster movie and a heist movie, it's not the worst I've ever seen. I can put it on in the background and cook dinner and be, you know, entertained enough.
I mean, I could put it on in the background and go to the store easily, yeah.
Okay, Sassy, that's perfectly fine. Whew. Okay, so
I mean, I guess my main issue is that there's a lot of things that could help this movie that, you know, just creating a sense of tension, just a couple things, doing them differently. I don't know. Because there's a lot of over-the-top stunts. Well, let's just make everything really wacky. Like, if we're not going to adhere to physics in this part, well, let's just throw it out the window for the entire movie and just really have some fun. But it's this weird line where we don't really have that much fun. Like, we have a few parts are tongue-in-cheek, but we just don't go all the way, and we don't create any tension when it easily could have, they could have gotten, you know, the pickup, you know, the assistant director to pick up some shots and have a little bit of tension here.
So for anyone who's ever listened to us, especially towards the end of 2018, Ward has had a goal to have a podcast go as long as one of our terrible movies has gone. We have gone 126 minutes. The movie was 144. I'm not going to let you get to 100.
Is
I'm not going to let you do it.
Is this the closest we've ever been?
This is the closest we've ever gotten. I will promise to leave it at 126 and try not to edit it down too much. There will be some. But
we need to find a shorter movie so we can get even closer. One day we're going
to
make it.
I'm sure we can find an 86-minute movie to satisfy your need. But in the meantime, Ward, if people want to find you and follow you online, where can they do that?
All over the place. Throw a stone and you'll probably hit my webpage. But in case you'd like to actually type it out and know what it is with wardworks.blogspot.com. I'm on Instagram. I do a lot of different projects. This upcoming year, I'm going to post some concepts because sometimes I don't get to projects. And I've put a lot of research and time into these things. And I just feel like it might help somebody if you look at all my research. Because some projects have had a lot of research. Sure. But they'll never see the light of day because some of them are a little pricey.
Sure. And you can find me at Nico Bell Fiction on Instagram or Twitter. Or NicoBellFiction.com on my website so you can read some of my short stories and horror stories. Also, I want to just kind of plug our merchandise on TeePublic. We have a store. You can search for Box Office Refund. And besides basically the typical podcast shirts, we do shirts based off of the movies we watch. So we have like a Bert's Butt shirt, which is based off of the awesome Tremors movie we watched. And we have one of the chicken dancing to a webcam, which is off of the LOL movie we watched. But I wanted to say that the number one selling t-shirt we had in 2018 was our Team Graboid shirt.
Good shirt.
Which was Ward's design. So awesome, Ward. Thank you so much.
I've been thinking about some ideas for Hurricane Heist, because if any movie
I have some for you for
shirt,
Hurricane Heist too. Hurricane Heist. I have to say, Ward is much better at the artsy stuff, so most of the designs are his. okay, well, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you again next week.
Box. office. Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.